This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Conference 2022, held at Faith Builders from August 7 to 9.
Okay, this morning's topic is nurturing humility in our students. Sometimes an objection comes up when we are talking about character development for students, and the objection is that parents should teach character and not teachers. It's not our job. I've heard this objection from fellow teachers. I have felt this objection rising up in me. Do you expect me to do a really great job of teaching Bible, math, grammar, writing, science, history, music, and PE, plus I'm supposed to teach character? Come on, let's make a deal here. You teach them how to act, I will teach them how to think. Well, maybe that would be nice. We're going to explore that a bit here this morning. But why are we talking about character when the subject is humility? Well, I mentioned that humility, as seen by many people throughout the centuries of Christian history, humility is seen as the queen of the virtues. It is the heart attitude that is behind most admirable character qualities. And so when we talk about character, we're often talking about something that's connected to humility. And we're going to be focusing on some character qualities this morning that have a connection to humility. But back to the question, who teaches character to our children? Well, I'm a parent. I have five children ages 5 through 11. And let me tell you, it is daunting. It is daunting. So take one look at our children. You've seen them around and you realize that we need help. You know, having children is a wonderful way to practice humility. One of our friends here this weekend said his favorite moment this weekend was watching Angelo run across the front of this auditorium yesterday. I'm glad it did something for him. So we need help. We need all the help we can get. And as Hillary Clinton said, one of the things she said that I think really was beneficial and will be part of her legacy is that it takes a village to raise a child. And that was actually an African proverb before she said it over here, but she made it popular, and we remember that. It takes a village, not just one person, not just one set of parents. They need all the help and love and attention and care and instruction that they can get. Jesus, our master and the master teacher, he knew this. He knew that people need character instruction no matter where they are. And he took it on himself to instruct and train and disciple his disciples. He wasn't just their academic teacher. He wasn't just teaching them a new theological way of looking at things, a new theological paradigm. He was doing that, but that wasn't really his main job. One of his main jobs with his disciples was just molding their character, teaching them how to live. And he did that by living with them and being very serious about their character development. And you know, he was following the Hebrew educational model, which the Hebrew model is, it's about raising good people. It's not just about teaching people how to think. It's about teaching people how to live. And that was the model that the Hebrews had used for centuries, and that he was exemplifying as well. Not just about learning from books, but about emulating the life of the teacher. So the disciples, when they followed Jesus, this was not some strange thing, actually, for people. in that day because there were other teachers, other masters, other rabbis who people followed. And following Jesus as they did was something that people did. And they learned from these masters. Jesus told us, Luke 6:39 and 40, then Jesus gave the following illustration. Can one blind person lead another? Won't they both fall into a ditch? Students are not greater than their teacher, but the student who is fully trained will become like the teacher. I don't think I've seen the connection between those two verses before, but the first verse about blind leading the blind reminds us that as teachers, if we are not who we want our students to be, we're both going to fall into the ditch. It's going to be a disaster, not only for us, but for our students following after us. And because students who are fully trained are going to become like their teacher. And this is an accepted model in that time and the one that he used with his disciples. So what did Jesus teach? Well, we looked at the scripture in Philippians 2 about having the mind of Christ. And that is such a foundational scripture. I will just read it again. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. And this follows the pattern that is shown in 1 Peter 5:6, where it says, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time. And that's what Jesus did in this Philippians passage where it says, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And then after that, God has now highly exalted him. And that is the very same pattern that we are called to do. Humble ourselves under God in obedience, and then God will exalt us. This is what Jesus taught. Jesus taught many things, but another thing that he taught had to do with children. And let me just read you Mark 9:33-37. Then he came to Capernaum. And when he was in the house, he asked them, what was it you disputed among yourselves on the road? But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. So the first thing I'd like to notice here is that Jesus was present and tuned in to what his disciples were doing and thinking and what they needed in terms of their own instruction and growth in their character. Jesus was not off in la-la land thinking about his next lesson plan. He was tuned in to what his disciples were talking about among themselves. And he picked up on something that was happening and he addressed it. He said, what were you talking about back on the road? He was noticing what was happening, and he turned it into a teachable moment, something that we have plenty of if we notice, if we pay attention and are present with our students. They didn't know what to say. He called them, all 12 of them. He said, let's make this a teaching moment for everybody. He called them together, and he gave them a lesson in humility. He said, if you want to be first, be last. If you want to be exalted, humble yourself. God will exalt you. If anyone desires to be first, be the last. And then he took a child who was there. Maybe it was a child that knew him. I don't know, but he took this child. And it says that he took the child into his arms. And he was using this child as the lesson. And you know, he said to them that whoever receives one of these children in my name receives me. And Jesus is teaching us, the disciples here, to value people in society who are not normally valued, which is something that he did a lot of, like Jesus with the woman caught in adultery, Jesus with the Samaritan woman, Jesus with outcasts, people who are poor, blind, and lame, and now people who are not valued because of their age, children. And he's saying, receive them and you receive me. Why are children not valued? Well, children are among a class of people who are not valued because they're similar to old people. They take a lot of care. They often don't have a lot to offer. They don't often make us feel really good about ourselves. They don't contribute in ways that we normally expect. They don't contribute in ways that we normally value. They do contribute in many valuable ways, if we would stop and pay attention. But he's saying, value these children. Whoever receives them receives me. You know, it's a gift to be around children. Too often, we, at least I, resent it. I know that parents resent it. Parents can tend to not want their lives to be taken away. And I'm talking about parents who have not accepted the responsibility of raising their own children, parents who both want to work, parents who don't want to have many children or any children because they're an intrusion on their lives. And as a person that's running a school with a child care program, I can resent it. Even though this is our job, I'm ashamed to say that I have resented the opportunity to receive these children. I've resented the demands of making sure that their needs are met, that their schedule is covered, because they do take a lot of work. And it hit me as I was studying for this, that I need to repent. I need to repent. It hit me what my attitude toward children has been at times. And I'm privileged to work with a set of beautiful and humble teachers who give themselves, who invest their lives in these children. And I admire them, and I want to go back and thank them and bless them and tell them that they are receiving Jesus. And I'm going to tell the same thing to my wife and to all parents and teachers who give themselves for little ones. Because when we do that, as he said, we're receiving Jesus. You know, I think when Jesus took this child into his arms, he must have felt this kinship with this child. Something about the humility and lowliness and vulnerability that child had is the same thing that Jesus himself experienced. That humility, that loneliness, that vulnerability, the lowliness is what I meant to say, not loneliness, lowliness. And it's Jesus, a person who was acquainted with grief, used to being rejected and not valued. He knew that people who received children would be the same kind of people that would receive him. And then, in this same scene with his disciples in a different gospel, Matthew 18, but it's probably the same thing, he tells us not only are we to receive children, but we're to learn from them. He says in Matthew 18:4, "Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So we're to receive the children and learn from their humility. Well, how are children humble? Well, they are simple. They are dependent. They are helpless. They are genuine. They are unpretentious. They are modest. They trust their parents to provide for them. They believe what they tell them. And generally, a child submits. A child submits to their authority, obeys them, and if the child does something wrong, they want to be reconciled to their authority. There's a lot to learn from there. Not only from children in their humility, but in their all-out, unhidden shortcomings. So they do show a natural humility that's beautiful, but they also show a natural pride, especially among their peers and among those that are younger than them. And the pride that they show is so obvious and so out of control, it's just flat out disgusting to us adults at times. It just produces in me a reaction of horror. How could you say that to your brother? So our goal for children is that they take that humility that they have toward their parents and extend it toward God in a lifelong relationship with God. And that they stay a child in that way throughout their life. And along the way, we can hopefully help them develop this humility in relationship with their peers, with their brothers and sisters, with those that are younger than they are. They have a lot to learn there. So how can we help children grow in humility and character? Well, we can help them grow in humility through awe and wonder. Awe and wonder. Because awe and wonder shows us how small we are. And it's just such a natural thing for children to experience awe and wonder, but we need to shepherd them and lead them toward that. And a natural place for that to happen is with God's creation. I mentioned to you that we don't see many sunrises. Well, this morning and yesterday morning, we saw sunrises because we're up in an apartment high up there in the building, and we can look out our window and see the sunrise. And even though yesterday morning it was really cloudy, we still saw a little sliver of a sunrise. And this morning, again, we saw a sunrise, and the children noticed that. They're really impressed with the sunrise. They don't get to see it. They heard me talking about it. I think that was the big thing. They heard me talking about it, and that pricked their ears and tuned them into thinking about the sunrise. This morning, I was walking out to my van to get a book, and it was dark, and I saw the moon up there, and just very close, a very bright planet. And I think it's Jupiter, because I think Jupiter, is that right? Jupiter is really bright right now. It's almost brighter than Jupiter. Maybe it was something else. It was super bright, and I looked out the other direction, and I could see Orion. And those are things that if I would talk about them with my children, they would start noticing those things, and I would love to be able to do that, but we don't see those very often. Caterpillars turning into butterflies. and other classroom marvels and jars and cages. These are things that children can experience awe and wonder through. I remember a song from a school program that talked about a butterfly being born. It has a line, "I couldn't do it even if I tried. Only God in heaven could make a butterfly." And the children singing that just with that sincere awe and wonder. That's incredible. Children should grow up singing in response to God in nature. They should grow up singing, "O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hand has made." We can grow humility and character in our children by nurturing attachment and trust. You know, for kids that grow up having to defend themselves, for kids that grow up without a secure home environment, they don't have loving people that they can form secure attachments with. For those children, humility does not make sense. Humility for them would equal death. What they need to learn in their minds is survival skills. And survival is about taking care of yourself. It's about asserting yourself. It's about living life on your own power that you can hopefully find somewhere, because life is not secure. Nobody is really looking out for you. And that's why attachment is essential for children. I mean, attachment is so essential for so many different reasons, but just pointing out that it's actually very difficult or impossible for children to develop humility if they are not securely attached to somebody that they can trust. That's why we need to care for children. Children need to be cared for. And there's a lot to this, of course, but one of the ways we can do this and that symbolizes our care for children is greeting them every morning when they come to our classroom with a hug or a handshake or a high five and a warm greeting. I'm glad to see you. I invite you into my presence. I'm glad to be with you. Children with attachment issues, which unfortunately there is a lot of that around, have their very foundation ripped out from under them. And it's such a challenge and an opportunity as we work with these wonderful children. And you know, attachment is foundational in our relationship with Christ. When we struggle with humility, isn't it because we are not firmly attached to Christ? We've let ourselves stray from the security that is found in Christ. And then we think we have to stick up for ourselves, we have to promote ourselves, we have to think about our own status, because we're not thinking about experiencing and feeling the reality of attachment to and union with Christ. So as we're with our children, we need to demonstrate a secure attachment to Christ so that the children who are with us can learn it as they grow and as they grow toward Christ and learn to place their trust in Him. We teach our children humility and character as we model a humble approach to weakness. So what are kids supposed to do with their weaknesses as humans? Well, Paul told us that he had a weakness, a thorn in the flesh, and he tried really hard to get rid of it, and he prayed three times, and he still had it. And he says to us in 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, my grace, this is what God said to him, and he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. He said that Christ told him that Christ's strength is made perfect in weakness. And so he was glad that he had his weakness, because then the power of Christ could be made more clear. And it's not only this thorn in the flesh that he was talking about, but other things that he experienced as a human: infirmities, reproaches, needs, persecutions, distresses, all for Christ's sake. In these things, in these just things that go with being human, he's glad for them, because the power of Christ can be shown in those things. What weaknesses do children face? Well, it's as a child, as we grow as a child, that we discover that humans are not all created with exactly the same set of abilities. And some children are slower readers, slower runners. They're not as tall. They have a speech impediment. They have dyslexia. They have other learning difficulties. Just a whole host of things. And we could talk about diseases and physical issues that are very difficult. So what are children supposed to do with these things? How do we help them process that and do well with those weaknesses? Well, I think children need heroes with weaknesses. Our neighbor back in Virginia, his name is Chris, and Chris had polio as a young child, and that was back before there was a lot of it going around, and he has crutches. His legs were amputated. He gets around with these crutches that he puts on his arm, so he just basically walks with these arm power. He's very strong in his arms, but lately we just visited him a couple of weeks ago, and his right up here, there's some sort of sore on his arm because of the way he uses them so much, so he's on his wheelchair a lot more. But he's a man that just has an incredible outlook, a positive person, always happy, glad to see us, upbeat about life, and he loves our children. So when our children see that, they see something that can teach them something about how to deal with their weaknesses. They need heroes like Helen Keller, who said, character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, vision cleared, ambition inspired, and success achieved. And yeah, she was an incredible example of somebody who triumphed in weakness and in suffering, and so much has been written about her, there we can tell her story, read books to our children about her, talk about her, hold these people up. They need heroes like their teacher. Teachers who have weaknesses and live out of their weaknesses, out of the power of Christ, in front of their children, and don't try to present a perfect facade, but people who show what it means to be a human and live humbly before God. Teachers who tell them stories. One of my stories that I could have told to my students is that I grew up and I have a bad left eye. My left eye is basically non-functional. I can see just, you know, I can see big things in it, but I can't see, I can't read. I might be able to recognize you if I know what color your clothes were, but it's actually got a big piece of tissue that's missing from the back. And one time recently, an eye doctor was looking at it and just gaping over this incredible piece of tissue missing in the back of my eye, and he wanted to show it to me and take pictures of it, and he thought it was really cool. Well, I wasn't sure. It was kind of fun, but it has been a trial for me because it really hurts my depth perception. And so I've learned to compensate for that quite a bit. Most of the time I don't think about it that much, but you know, certain times in sports I would do, you know, stupid things like just jumping up to spike a volleyball and completely missing it. And another thing that's very difficult is ping pong. So growing up I was never very good at ping pong. And one time I was with my cousins. We had taken a trip to Costa Rica. I was probably 13, 14, 15. And we were playing round table around a ping pong table. And, you know, I wanted to have fun with my cousins, so I was doing it, but I just kept messing up. And I remember eventually just stopping and sitting out and not wanting to play and feeling really terrible about myself. And you know, I wish that I would have been willing to talk to an adult about that, have somebody that could have told me that everybody has weaknesses. It's normal. It's part of being human. It's a reminder of our humanness. It helps us to learn humility. It helps us depend on Christ. And also, you can learn and grow. Don't let your weakness get you down. Don't compare yourself with others. So you could practice ping pong. You could probably learn to be pretty decent at it. Just as long as you don't let a comparison with other people discourage you. So it's things like that we need people to be talking to our children about. And they need us to be helping them process those things with them and showing them by our example how to live with weakness. And then we need teachers who demonstrate and teach a growth mindset. The word growth mindset was popularized by Carol Dweck in a book in 2006 called Mindset. And it's kind of been a thing for quite a while, but I really like it. And I believe that growth mindset should be a pet subject of every teacher. This is not something we can afford not to think about, and it probably has been for years and years, even before then, because long ago we had teaching on perseverance and teaching on humility and books like The Little Engine That Could and so on. So it's nothing really new. Maybe it's just been repackaged a little bit. But one of the most frustrating moments of teaching is when you have a child who forgets how to learn, who seems to forget that their main job as a student is to learn. And they give up on learning. They give up on learning. It looks too painful, looks too hard to learn, and they decide that it's more comfortable and preferable to stay where they are. That is so frustrating for them and for the teacher. I remember when I learned as a teacher that this thing of intelligence is not fixed, that brains can grow and they can change with work. And I shared that at a school chapel with the whole school. And I was talking about this thing in your brain called dendrites, and that's all I remember. Dendrites, and there's something in your brain called dendrites. And they, when you learn, they make connections. And I'm sure I'm getting some of this wrong, but anyway, the point is that dendrites and your brain can grow and change as you learn. It's exciting because it's actually a physical change that happens because of your learning. And so the challenge is to go out and learn so you can keep on growing those dendrites. Well, one of the students, I think in the third grade, came back in a couple of days and said he went home and he had a dream. He dreamed that his dendrites were growing down to his toes. That was great. Something had made a connection there, and I was so happy. So talk about your learning with your kids, how you learn. Talk about how you learn. For example, you as a teacher, you're learning so much as a teacher, and you're constantly challenged. You can barely keep up with the learning that you have to do. And they don't have to be a teacher to have to do that. Almost wherever they go, they are going to have to learn. They are going to have to be a lifelong learner. You know, what is really sobering these days is that things are changing so fast that in a couple of years, they say by 2035, 40% of the jobs that we have today are not going to be around. There's going to be a robot at McDonald's flipping the burgers. There's going to be a computer driving the trucks down the road. There's going to be some kind of AI making paintings, of all things. I mean, they already have artificial intelligence that has made paintings that look like something that a master would do, which is really disconcerting. And they also have artificial intelligence that will write prose. If you just feed it a couple lines related to a subject that you know about, it'll spit out a couple of paragraphs that sound like somebody that was an expert wrote that. And that is disturbing, to say the least. But the fact is, there's a lot of changes that are very likely coming down the pipe just for our occupation. And so if there is ever a time when children need to learn to be lifelong learners, it is now. I mean, it was always appropriate to be a lifelong learner. But we can really make the case for it now. You can talk about how your job needs learning and how learning works for you. Learning is not always easy. Learning can be painful. Like right now, I'm in a job that it feels to me like I'm just on the edge of failure. I mean, that's how hard it is for me. And it's not easy to do the job I'm doing. And hopefully that's about where we all are. We should all be pushing ourselves or taking on responsibilities that call the max from us. Of course, we've got to be able to live with ourselves and we've got to be able to live, but if we're not being challenged, we're not growing. And so, in my job, I had a visit from Gerald and Patrick the other day, and they just took a look at my school and gave me all kinds of stuff to think about. I'd actually asked them and paid them. I think I'm going to pay them. to come check out my school. And let me tell you, when they were there, it was really exciting. I got a vision, I got new ideas for how I could, you know, how we could work on some of the challenges that we have there. And the next day, when I read the report that they sent me, then I was really humbled and pained and thought about everything that we needed to change and just sunk in, you know, all the things they said. And what they probably meant was that I'm a failure, right? And I'm sure that's what they were after. And that's how learning goes a lot of times. We can feel like a failure. But we don't have to. It can be helpful feedback that can help to make us grow. And God uses people who are humble learners. So let's take a look a little more at what growth mindset is. So it's defined in various ways. This is from a book called The Boy's Guide to Growth Mindset, which just came out in 2022. There's also a book called The Girl's Guide to Growth Mindset. And it's a workbook for kids 8 to 12 years old. So a growth mindset sees failures as opportunities for growth, whereas a fixed mindset, the opposite of a growth mindset, says, if I don't try, then I won't fail. Growth mindset, I can learn to do anything. Fixed mindset, I'm either good at something or not. A growth mindset, I'm inspired by other people's success. A fixed mindset, I'm jealous of other people's success. A growth mindset, when I'm frustrated, I keep trying. Fixed mindset, when I'm frustrated, I give up. Growth mindset, I enjoy trying new things. Fixed mindset, I only stick to what I know. Growth mindset, I ask for help when I need it. Fixed mindset, I avoid asking for help because people may think I don't know how to do something. Growth mindset, when I don't succeed at first, I give it another shot. Fixed mindset, if I don't succeed immediately, it's time to try something else. So I'm curious if you could recommend right now out loud any books or stories that you have used to teach a growth mindset, because there's plenty of them out there, even older ones that don't talk about it in this way. Like I mentioned, The Little Engine That Could, a book about Helen Keller, the book Carry On, Mr. Bowditch are three that I thought about. If I can figure out how to type on this thing. Well, maybe I won't type on it. Just curious, are there any stories that you can think of or books that are connected with persevering, with not giving up, with a growth mindset? The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. I don't think I've read that one. Anything else? What was that again? Thank you, Mr. Falker, by Patricia Pilaka. Thank you. Well, there's plenty. And it's just a matter of looking for those stories, reading them, and talking about what's happening with our children. There's a story here that I thought maybe we could look at. But I think we'll skip it, actually. The Girl Who Never Made Mistakes. That's a great story. Okay, I think we'll end here by talking about leading toward service. I just want to tell you what happened for me here yesterday. When I went down and I sat in Gerald's workshop on teaching students about service, teaching students how to serve, you know, you can learn a lot from books. And I've been doing a lot of reading for the last couple of years. And in some ways, You know, I do all that reading and I wonder, you know, what did it benefit? It can be really hard to really embody what you're reading and figure out which of it is important and how and just how to put it together. That's the challenge. But when you have a person that shows you the way and says, this is how this looks, that is so incredibly valuable. And that's what happened for me yesterday when I was sitting in that class learning at the feet of Gerald. And it was powerful. And it felt to me like a moment of conversion almost. As I got this picture, and it felt like for the first time, a picture of hands-on, all-in, connected, caring leadership and discipling of students. And I could just see him. I could see him right here in this place discipling these students and in the context of serving and cleaning restrooms and things like this. And I've heard him talk about this lots of times before, but something clicked. And something clicked maybe because Gerald has been a mentor for the last 2 years for me in the Servant Institute program, which has been incredibly powerful. But what he's doing, what he's done for me, and the vision that he gave me yesterday, that's what we need to be doing with our students. And we do that as we are with them, as they see us, as they get that picture of what it's like to follow Christ from us, as they get the picture of what it's like to learn, to have a growth mindset, to face our weaknesses. I think we'll stop there and just end with the verse again. The student who is fully trained will become like his teacher.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769. Recordings from past events are also available at www.thedocforlearning.com.